Hi, this is Nancy Clare. Welcome to episode 104 of Speaking of Mysteries, the first episode of 2017. My guest is Rennie Erth, whose fifth John Madden crime fiction novel, The Death of Kings, was published last week on January 3rd. Early in our interview, I made the mistake of referring to Madden as Inspector Madden. Rennie quickly corrected me. By the time of The Death of Kings, which takes place in the late 1940s, John Madden has retired from investigating crime to a farm in the south of England. His skills as a detective, however, were far from retired, and Scotland Yard called on his expertise to reinvestigate a murder that took place in 1938, a crime for which a man had been tried, convicted, and hanged. And although the book's beginnings might lead you to believe this is a story in the mien of an Agatha Christie country house murder, the resolution takes readers a great distance, through the dreariness of post-war London and the early days of the Chinese triad gangs in England. Here's Rennie Erth. Welcome back to Speaking of Mysteries. This is Nancy Clare, and today we're delighted to be talking to Rennie Erth, who has just written his fifth Inspector John Madden mystery. And if you haven't met Inspector Madden, you should. Welcome, Rennie.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy.
First of all, congratulations on the publication of your latest book, The Death of
Kings. Thank you very much for that. And I'll just slip in a quick correction. You call him Inspector Madden. Of course, he started out as Inspector Madden, but he's no longer Inspector Madden. He retired from the police and periodically gets drawn back into the business of solving mysteries, as you probably know.
Yeah. As he did in The Death of Kings. Well, my apologies, and I will now refer to him as Mr. Madden.
Or just John Madden, if you
like. Or just John. First, I want to ask a question about sort of a personal question. You're a native of South Africa, and you worked as a foreign correspondent for the news agency Reuters, and you now live in Italy, you lucky man.
Yes, I'm sort of based in Italy at the moment. I actually move around quite a lot, but I have been based here for a while now, yes.
But with all of this sort of, wandering the world, why did you decide to set your series not just in England, which is interesting enough, but in the period that begins just after World War I?
Yes, it's an interesting question. I've asked myself that, too. I think it's because that period of English history, starting from after World War I and running up to, running through the between the wars period and post-wars, is one that's always interested me very much. And I've read a lot about it, both in historical sense and in the terms of the fiction that's written about them. It's what excites my imagination, I suppose. I can't say anything else. I don't try to set books in a contemporary frame because frankly, technology moves so quickly that by the time you've written your book, it's outdated practically. I like the fact that they're set back in time, and I can make up my mind about them and say, I think life was like this, and then write about it. Is that an answer for you?
It's absolutely an answer, and it's the time period for the series, as you just mentioned, it's a fascinating one, and especially for England. And your current book, The Death of Kings, is in the post-World War II. And that late 40s, early 50s period of time in England is beginning to get more attention. Netflix has just released The Crown about the first decade of Queen Elizabeth's reign. And
yes,
to me, it's
yes.
like, the entire world has changed. England has changed. John Madden sort of straddles
it
the
old. It has changed enormously, hasn't it? And I'd also say the same of your country. I was a journalist in Washington when I was a young man during the Kennedy administration, and I think your country has changed out of all recognition, really. It hardly seems the same country to me now as the one I knew when I lived there. And it's true of England, of course. It's changed. It has changed fantastically in the last 50 years or so. Yeah.
But don't you think that what struck me, especially about The Death of Kings, was that England had changed, and John Madden is not a man adverse to change, but most people that surrounded him didn't really see that everything had changed.
No, probably not. You know, I think there was a sense after the First World War of never again. They were, you know, that was going to be the war to end all wars, and then they had the terrible experience of World War II, which in a sense was inevitable. But I think after that war, they were just exhausted. The country was actually quite exhausted, and they were still living in very hard conditions. There was food rationing. There was very little coal. All these things were a problem. I think the country just got tired, you know, and exhausted. Madden lives in the country, so he isn't suffering the worst of these things, which probably happened in the cities, I think.
But he goes back and forth, and I think your book does a very good job of contrasting what's going on in London, which is still got huge holes, especially in the
yes.
East End,
mm-hmm.
where they, as the bombers from Germany flew up and followed the River Thames, they started to unload their bombs on the East End, and there are huge holes, and he's still... As he walks to and fro when he's in London, he sees these, and it's a constant reminder. In the country, there's a little more food, it's a little bit more comfortable, absolutely.
Yes, it is indeed. And as you say, the bomb damage took a long time to be repaired. They didn't have that much money after the war, the Brits, you know. They'd sort of spent it all on the war. And so the program of repairing and restoring the city took a hell of a long time, really.
Right, and there was no Marshall Plan for England.
There was no Marshall Plan for England. In fact, I have to tell this to you, that the Americans wanted all the money they'd lent to England during the war paid back pronto. You know, they wanted it back, so that didn't make things any easier either.
But back to the story of the death of kings. It's initially the investigation begins with the re-examination of a murder of a young
yes.
actress named Portia Blake, and and that murder took place right in the year before England entered the Second World
yes.
War.
And yes, 1938. Mm-hmm.
When the new evidence comes to light. The man who's encouraging the case be reopened is actually a retired Scotland Yard chief inspector who is against capital punishment, and he thinks
yes.
that a grave miscarriage of justice may have occurred because someone was hanged for the murder.
Mm.
And I just was wondering, is this something that really was sort of an active thing going on in England in the late 40s and early 50s?
Yes, it was indeed. There was a growing move against capital punishment, which finally reached fruition when it was banned in England. You know, we don't have capital punishment there. At that time, it still existed, and there was, if I recall rightly, an attempt to get it voted down in Parliament, but it didn't succeed. But This retired chief inspector Sinclair, who actually figures largely in all the books, he's a sort of great friend of Madden's and a support to him. He obviously felt very strongly about the fact that this man had been hanged, who was arrested for the crime, and this is what actually propels him into wanting the case looked into again.
And of course, as Madden is looking into the case, he's asked. He goes to Scotland Yard, he makes his case for reopening it. Just by initiating the reinvestigation, it sort of triggers a number of things.
It does indeed, yes.
More
quite
crimes.
Right. It also
committed.
Calls back the past. It calls back the past, yes, very much so. You know, what happened that day when the girl was murdered and sort of what happened afterwards too. All of that.
And of course, that's a great thing in mysteries, that the secrets of the past never stay secret.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, yes,
they do come back to bite you.
It's also a book, you know, which has to do with friendship. The friendship he forms with one of the main characters, Richard Jessop, actually, you know, lies at the very heart of the story, as you'll know if you've read it. And
mm-hmm.
and that's also part of what I wanted to write about.
Well, you anticipate my next question, which was sort of about redemption, and
the seeking of redemption, which of course is a mainstay in noir fiction. And I think that one of the things that draws these two men together for sort of this beginning of a friendship is that they're both looking for a form of redemption. They're both looking to be made whole.
I don't think Madden is particularly. He's actually acting as a friend first of all towards Sinclair, who he worked under going right back to the First World War, who has always been his friend, and he's actually looking into this case not because it particularly interests him, but because it's something Sinclair cares about very much. Jessop has his own demons to deal with, and they're sort of drawn together. But I don't think Madden is seeking redemption too much, you know. I think he's acting out of friendship.
I think he's acting out of friendship, but it struck me that when he met up with the woman that Richard Jessop's father...
Oh, yes, Mrs. Castleton,
that he wanted to know what she thought of his wife, whom Mrs. Castleton had met. And I thought that was a very touching moment in the book. And that's what made me think that he was looking to see...
I'm glad you felt that. I see what you mean. They actually realized they were kind of I was going to say brothers under the skin, but of course they're a man and a woman. They were very similar. They had actually been through similar experiences. And felt their lives had been, if not exactly saved, at least fundamentally altered by the relationships they had had.
By love, and that's
and
what
by
I
love,
meant.
By love, indeed.
That's what I meant by.
Yes, absolutely. But yes, that is so. Yes.
Mm. And you mentioned that England at this period of time was short of money. I mean, there just wasn't enough money to rebuild, to get out from under the sanctions. And I thought that it was interesting that was reflected in how the men that worked, and mostly men, although you do have one woman detective who's really, I think you could have a whole series about her. She was amazing.
Well, she's a favorite character of mine. I like her very much. But I have to tell you, there were very few active women detectives at that time. So if you say there's only one, there were other women in the CID, but they were mostly given what they call domestic cases to deal with, as a matter of fact. She's actually rather an exception because I've sort of purposely written her to be an extremely talented detective. And she will sort of figure in future. In the book I'm writing now, she will figure too.
But the point I was trying to make is one of the criteria, one of the lenses that they look at this crime through is the resources and spending the money. And it seems like they're acutely aware that there's very little money in the budget for things that are very expensive, the petrol for the cars, getting photographs done, the forensics. And forensics were fairly sophisticated, much more sophisticated than I think people think they were. There were labs that tested blood and fingerprints and all of that, but it was a precious resource. And one of the questions they're asking themselves is, are we really going to spend this much time looking into a crime that started in 1938, even though other people died? I found that just really interesting.
I think so. Of course, with the crime having been committed so long before, there would have been no possibility of any fresh forensic evidence. I don't think that was long gone. I think the police, like everyone else, operated under tight budgets. But I didn't actually feel that what you're saying tremendously when I was writing the book. I think they sort of all made do with what they had. They were eating rather dull and uninteresting food, and sort of probably felt a bit depressed by the sort of general climate in the country. But I don't quite get your point about the shortage of money on forensics. I think they didn't want to. open the case again, because it was, you know, there was the equivalent of opening a can of worms, unless it was a genuine case, as it were.
And of course, it turned out to be a genuine case, and there were.
It turned out to be a genuine case eventually, after quite a struggle, actually. But that was because the person behind. I should mention at this stage that the reason the case is reopened is because a jade pendant is found is sent to one of the two detectives who were in charge of the case, with the suggestion that this means the wrong person was hanged, and I think that's actually that's quite important. I think, you know, that pendant becomes the main, you know, the main sort of object in
and
the
of
place,
course the
in,
taunt,
the, in the book.
The taunting escalates. The person who sent the necklace then sends suggestive notes and photographs to the press.
To the press. The person behind all that is the person who is, in fact, insisting that this case be reopened, because it's a form of threat directed at one of the characters in the book.
And I thought it was also interesting that the book, at least I felt the book, touched on the changing nature of crime, because you have this murder, this domestic murder. It filters out into the guilty party trying to cover up what happened. But there's also the beginnings of gang crime, and the Chinese gangs are introduced.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that was an interesting. I decided it actually starts as though it might be a sort of Agatha Christie type murder, with somebody murdered at a country house, you know, on a weekend. That sort of thing, but it moves into another area, and indeed the drug trade did start to move into England in a serious way around about that time, and it came from Holland basically, where there was a big triad presence, you know. Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of part of this international sort of the globalization. It's the beginning of the globalization of crime, I think, as you put out. You know,
yes. I think you're right. Yes, I think that is true. It was, you know, it was becoming international, as you say, exactly. Yes.
Mm. And so it moved from this triad, moved from Hong Kong to Rotterdam, which of course had been flattened in the war and was
flattened. Yes, the old city of Rotterdam was flattened absolutely. Yeah, almost to the last building. Yeah.
And so to me that engenders, at least in my mind, this chaotic kind of place where things are being built and shipping's being reinstated. You know, the world is getting itself going, and it's a great time for nefarious people to slip into a city because so much is going on.
And of course, you see, if they had a Hong Kong background, they would be able to come to London fairly easily, you see, because Hong Kong was then a British colony, as it were. And they could come to London, a Chinese. And almost all the Chinese who are living in London come from Hong Kong, and still do. Most of them have a Hong Kong background. You know. Mm-hmm.
So you touched on this, you know, where you see John Madden going in his next novel, because you've been working on this series for quite a while. The first one actually was published in 1999, and by the way, River of Darkness.
That's correct.
Was nominated for everything.
It got some nominations. You're right. Yes, it did. It did well. I was pleased about that. It was a book I wrote from the heart. I had strong feelings about the First World War, based on what I'd read about it, and also the fact that my father was in it. You know, he fought in it, and his brother was killed in it. And I wanted to write something that would echo it, as it were. Not something that actually would take place during the war, but one in which the shadow of the war would hang over, as it were, which indeed the first book, you know, River of Darkness, was just that, in fact. Yeah.
And so the next one, will it take place fairly soon after the death of King's ends?
Well, it will take place quite soon, because my characters are getting rather old. So it's going to happen a year or two later. In fact, I haven't yet actually specified the date, but I see it as about 1951. I will make that plain at some point. I've sort of got into it. I'm just in the sort of first phase of it now. And at a certain point, I'll decide exactly when I want it to be settled. Mm.
That's very exciting, I think, starting a book. So you start with an idea and go from there, I take it.
That's what I do. I start from an idea, and I also try to work out quite a detailed outline before I start, always understanding that this can change. It can change in the course of the book. I think I've always found what's important is obviously knowing how you're going to start it, but also knowing how you're going to end it. The path that leads between those two can actually change from what you originally thought would happen, because you know characters have this strange way of sort of taking over their roles, and you have to sort of follow them, you know, as they go.
I think that's one of the most fascinating things about talking to writers is understanding the relationship they have with their characters, because that's exactly what it is. They don't just live in your mind.
That's true, and actually, while you're writing a book, they become quite real, and you sort of, as it were, spend a lot of time with them. That's actually basically what it is, and they take on a near reality, I find, anyway. Mm-hmm.
So you began your career as a communicator, as they would say in the 21st century, and you then decided to write crime fiction. Did you read crime fiction in your spare time? Is there anyone who influenced you, anyone whose writing influenced you and made you think, oh, God, I'd love to do that?
Well, I always thought, you know, I thought from sort of quite early time, i.e. from my late teens and early 20s, that I wanted at some stage to be a writer. And so I sort of fell into journalism, as it were, because it was the next best thing. And because I actually enjoyed being a reporter during those years, I think. But I always had in mind that I wanted to write fiction. And I would say the writer who actually... Who I felt influenced me most at that time was Graham Greene, who was a writer I admired very much. And the first book I tried to write after I left Reuters was a straight novel, which alas showed all too much the influence of Mr. Greene. But it taught me a great lesson, which is that you sort of have to let your literary heroes go and find your own voice. Anyway, that's how it started. And my next book was a sort of comedy set in Rome, called Snatch, which did quite well. They made a movie of it a long time ago, and then I sort of thought about writing crime stories after that. I think those of us who write crime stories are living in a good time, because the genre has expanded so much. It can now cover almost anything, you know, politics, corruption, all sorts of things, which are a far cry from this, you know, from the sort of country house murders of the sainted Agatha Christie and others like her.
Well, but I think but that's what I thought was so remarkable about your book, and I would actually categorize Snatch more as a caper than a comedy. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Oh, did you? You've actually read it? Oh, well done. It's kind of a collector's item now. Yes, I was actually living in Rome at that time. I'd been living in Greece before then, because as I say, I've moved around. And I was living in Rome, and I had this idea for the book, and thought, well, I might as well set it in Rome. Why not? Here I am. Yeah, I think Rome at the time I was there was a sort of great place to live. I'm not so sure it's so wonderful anymore. But anyway, let's not get into that.
All right. What I was going to say was, one of the things I liked about The Death of Kings was it started out as a country house kind of murder, and then immediately segued into a much bigger story, to me, about class and about the changing society in England, the changing role of women, even though there are very few women in some of these professions. John Madden's wife is a doctor, which was unusual for someone who would have gone to medical school in the 30s.
Yes, exactly. Well, she would have gone even earlier, in fact, because that sort of covered rather in the first book, River of Darkness. You know, when she'd been living a kind of society life, going to parties and everything, and decided that this wasn't what she wanted to do with her life. And so she became a doctor over the objections of her father, who thought this wasn't a suitable job for a woman, but she talked him round and became a doctor in the end, yes. But she would have been one of the early practitioners in England, yeah.
And he's an advocate for women doing what they're best at doing, and that makes him. But that, I think that makes him a bit unique, and so that's what I appreciated about the story was it without making him precious and a caricature. It's you're sort of foreshadowing many things that are going to come, including the national health. Because
yes, including that too. Yes, and sort of foreshadowing women's education, which at that point, you know, wasn't all that great. There was, you know, sort of women were being educated basically to be good wives, or to be useful as things like shorthand typists or that sort of thing. But that was about to change, I think. You know, at around about that time.
It hadn't changed yet.
You know, it hadn't changed yet really.
That's why I think it's such an interesting period. It's like people were just going along. They were slogging along. It was a hard, as you said, it was a hard life.
I don't think things really changed, Nancy, till the 60s when you had that sudden explosion of Carnaby Street and the Beatles and all that. Then the country really transformed itself. But up to then, they were still kind of old-fashioned England was still going along with some small changes here and there, but not of any major, not of a major kind. Then things suddenly changed with a kind of bang, you know, an explosion. Yeah.
I guess I'm always interested in the groundwork. I'm always interested in what came before, what set up these things. And I felt you touched on that in the book. It was a very enjoyable story.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yes, it was slightly different from the ordinary kind of thriller because it had a different kind of ending, as you know, from having seen it from the way thrillers often end. But I felt that was the right ending for it. You know, books have a sort of right ending, and I thought that was the correct ending. So there it is.
Yeah. I thought it worked, and was satisfactory in a sad kind of way.
No, it's the death of kings, after all, in that, as it were, and that was just the way it was, and Madden felt it deeply too, I think. Yeah.
Well, Rennie, thank you so much for your time today and talking to us, and we look forward to the next installment of John Madden.
Thank you, Nancy. It's been a pleasure talking to you.